Hey, what's up, guys? Lucas Burnley here with my co-host TJ Schwartz. You're listening to the Edge and Flow podcast. It's kind of a free-form discussion where we talk about the knife industry, manufacturing, get kind of heady and philosophical on everything surrounding those two topics, and have the tendency to go off on tangents related. How's your day going, TJ?
Yeah, heavy on that tendency, I think.
Day's
going good. It was a busy, there's that word again, busy day, running around, but super productive. I had a good day, really good day.
Nice. I've got something related to your busy comment. Actually, I am noticing a trend. I heard people say busy for a long, long time. I mean, we're talking like at least a decade where like that's kind of a joke, right? Like this is like the standard state. How's it going? You see someone you haven't seen in a while. Like, how are you doing? Busy.
I saw that exact one.
Lately?
Was it like a reel?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I
it's
saw that.
But it's real, right? I mean, it's meme worthy, like like cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that tired is the new busy.
Yeah.
I've had
I'm
multiple
a synonym.
Conversations with people. Yeah. Like where lately I'm like, hey, how's everything going? Like, oh, good, man. I'm tired. And I have just started to like wonder if maybe that is taking the place or like related or maybe age related to those of us who said we were busy for a long time. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Tired and busy are interchangeable in a lot of situations.
It's kind of weird. Yeah. It's just like I've had a couple conversations recently where I'm like, that's the overwhelming kind of just like, I don't know, like vibe. It's just like it's a lot. I think people are doing a lot in a lot of different areas of their life, and like busy doesn't wrap it up.
It's the
maybe.
they call it the American way, but it's not just American, but the rat race or whatever you call it, you know.
Yeah,
but
I wonder with a lot of this stuff, like obviously it's self-imposed. I mean, a lot of it probably has to do with like being from like a capitalistic society, like upbringing, where you're essentially taught that like being productive is good and like more productive is better. Right. And to be valuable, you need to produce.
Yeah. Which is maybe polarizing, but I do agree with it.
Yeah, so digging on like
when not extreme, when not taken to absurdity, because that's the problem, is like everything in moderation, including being productive, you know.
Ooh. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's been productive.
Nice.
I won't say busy. It's
productive. Let's start with your productivity today.
So today I sharpened a bunch of knives. Like
nice.
One of the biggest sharpening days I've ever had, just because of the way it all stacked up. Which was awesome. Went really smooth. Got a bunch of them ready. A bunch of them are shipping right now as we speak.
Nice.
So came in. I was like, I need to go in there, warm up the machine. So I'll show up early before everybody else so I can get the machines warmed up and then just start sharpening. And I sharpened until close to lunchtime. Got them all done. So that was just like hyper-focused. I liken it to playing Operation for like 6-5 hours straight. So it's like when you're done, your like nerves are a little bit fried, but it's also very satisfying the whole time, because I find I can't daydream while I'm sharpening. It's one of the few things where it's like, no, look at the part, like think about the part, be the part. Like,
yeah, there's like there's a stress level that never goes, because it basically like that's like final process. Everything is finished. One errant like touch to any
just
part
a
of
twitch.
That,
yeah,
a twitch. Is either a scrapped part or refinishing something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sharpened for 5 hours?
Like 4 or 5 hours, probably.
Dude, that's a lot of sharp. How many knives?
No, well, let me think. It was about 7:30 till about 11. So I guess it wasn't that long. It was like 3 to 4 hours.
That's still 4 hours.
But it was like 40 knives.
Are you sharpen edge up or edge down?
Edge down.
Okay. You do it standing?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're not using any kind of like fixture or
it's all fixtured.
It is all fixtured.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That obviously that changes a lot.
Yeah.
I was going to say that's a lot of like so freehanding.
The only thing that gets me with sharpening is looking straight down.
Yeah.
The kink in my neck is the only limiter. Yeah. I want to buy another bench grinder that isn't a big heavy TW90 and almost like wall mount it so that the platen is actually parallel to the ground. Like imagine a flat platen that's down so that when you're sharpening, you're actually pushing up into the belt. Instead of pushing it forward into the belt, you know,
so
what I mean?
Like you could have like one of the old, like a, you know, like a 6x48 where you could like lay them flat. You'd literally have it. So you just need a platen on the underside of a grinder.
Yes, exactly.
That's all you need. Which that seems pretty doable.
Yeah. Well, I think if you literally took a grinder and wall mounted it, it would possibly work.
Dude, that makes me feel super weird.
Only because if I had a chair or standing and I had it perfectly at eye level, then my head is looking straight forward and then my neck wouldn't get kinked. That's I've gone through like for years. I've thought about this because that's the one thing that bothers me with like working on a grinder is my neck.
Yeah.
I've always thought like, what if I put like a headrest on it? I've thought about that too. Mm-hmm. So that I'm not like suspending my head the whole time. So it's like if there was like a little piece of like carpeted foam or something like that I could lean my head on, that's another possible thing. But I like sharpening. It's just, I do get a little bit of neck pain from it, but
that's an interesting, well, then the neck thing is that, I mean, that is like a knife maker issue in general, like you are not doing as much work on a 2x72 grinder.
Right.
I ground blades this morning and I notice it instantly.
Yeah.
It's super uncomfortable. I basically like you really need to take a break like every 15 minutes and like do like a doorway stretch or something.
Yeah.
But there's nothing good about it for your body. It's
yeah,
like
it's
the
bad.
Weight of your head at a 45 degree angle minimum off
pretty much
of your spine.
Looking straight down. It's like the worst. Yeah.
I have thought about like a periscope.
Oh yeah. Mirror.
Would be, I just don't know how that would transfer, but like engravers do it, right?
Yeah.
So like engravers sit perfectly straightforward, and they've got their microscope and work 90 degrees to their focal plane.
There's got to be something in there. So anyways, that's a good idea, and I have thought about that for years, and now is time to start doing something about that
after you've done it for
because,
4 hours.
Well, I do want to get another belt grinder specifically for sharpening. The TW90s way too versatile to just be a sharpening rig. Like it's overkill for that. So it's better if that was like the do all, like it's over there, use it for deburring or whatever. And then have like a burger, like some simple 2x72. That's just easy to sharpen.
Well, and there's no reason that you even need a 2x72.
Only thing is when you sharpen a nut, or when I have found I sharpen enough knives at 64 Rockwell, the more media on a belt, the better, like as far as it not burning up.
One thing, you know, what could be cool is a one by, I mean, you can just split belts.
Yeah.
But if you had a one by platen, because the support of the platen, you're grinding on the edges of the belt when you're sharpening a lot of times, at least like to start, like if you're getting into a choil or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You need a hard edge. If you had a one by platen, one by belt, you get two belts out of every 2x72. And I think I think it would like functionally, I think that would work pretty well.
It might. I think you might be
There's a company, I actually just saw them at Blade Texas and I'm blanking on their name right now, but they do a sharpening system that is, it might be like a 1x42, but it's like horizontal and they use like woodworking, like chisel sharpening clamps. So if you've ever seen like the stone kind of sharpeners that woodworkers use, it uses like a clamp and a rest. And I've wondered about those, but like you're fixturing, so it's like a different kind of a different deal.
I feel really comfortable sharpening with the fixture I have. Like I said, I think orientation
is the only thing. But you still see how you wouldn't be able to see anything if you had it under the belt.
You would have to have it up at eye level. So the thing would be like up like either 6 feet high where it's like you're standing, or it's like 48 inches high where you're sitting.
But then where are your hands?
Yeah, your hands would be up. like near your eye level.
Yeah.
So you're sitting like back in a chair and you're sharpening like this, as opposed to like looking down. I know you guys don't have a video feed, but I hope you can visualize. Like, the belt is going directly towards the wall, away from you, parallel to the floor, and your knife is being put up against it.
We need to start just recording video.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. I saw Dune 2 last night, which I don't know if you're like a Dune fan.
I've never seen them.
Have you read the books?
No.
Oh, God, dude. Okay. That's like, I think you would really enjoy it. Imagine like warring agrarian tech society. So basically, yeah, like going to a planet to like they say mine, but it's more like farming.
Oh, I see.
But like a lot of like family intrigue. Really, really good. But there is a scene with one of their quadcopter pilots where he's just wearing almost like a VR.
Mm.
I wonder if instead of a periscope,
a camera,
you could essentially use a wearable camera and just have, dude, that
or,
is,
or just have the screen on the above the thing, either wearable or just have like a monitor so that you're looking at a monitor.
I feel like the wearable is was like almost, because I want to see like I'm seeing now.
Yeah.
I just, it would, the only thing that you would have to do is figure like, okay, my head orientation is not related to what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So like your movement might change, but that's like a pretty interesting idea.
The only hard part about that is I have to look at the knife too. Like I have to look down and look at the, like physically look at it. So if the camera didn't have that in frame,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
You'd almost need like exactly what your eyes are seeing. So whatever field of view that is,
yeah.
You'd essentially have that being recorded. I guess the only thing you run into there is the weight of whatever you're wearing, your head.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm curious to see like if you find a solution for that.
Yeah. No, I'm going to play with it. I've thought about it for a long time. Never had the space to have a dedicated rig, because you're not going to be able to use it for much else if it's weirdly mounted like that. So I did that. And then I built another LT5 fixture to bring us down to where there's only one fixture left to get this knife ready to go. I've been milking this out longer than I was hoping. But it's just so much to do with the shop and production that it's just like in the margins. And all that I have is looking like Monday morning. The form for the Kydex is all that's left, because today I made the fixture for you. I formed the Kydex and then I put it in the Tormach and it machines the Kydex. I now have the fixture for inside the machine, which is not a form. It's just to hold the formed piece.
Once it's formed.
Yeah. And so I just have the form is all that's left. And I have a couple 3D printed elements that are going to be on the form that I already printed. So all that's left is like machine this aluminum palette with the, you know, the 3D relief of two halves, like butterflied out of the LT5.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all programmed. Just got to hit cycle start on Monday and hopefully that goes well. And so
that is your form. And what do you use for a form? So you have like 3D printed handle components.
So the handles, what I'm going to be doing, I think moving forward, is the handles are all going to be actual handles.
Okay.
Like I can just take an actual handle, and then I do have to chop it off to where I only have like the front retention zone of the handle, but I just take an actual handle. And then I have to have some sort of blocking, because you have to have a clearance channel for like, you know, entry and exit near like where the finger, your forefinger is on a knife. And so I 3D printed one of those with an SLA with a resin printer. And so I've done that before with the 3D prints. It does pretty well with Kydex. So if I have basically the palette is aluminum and it's the tang of the knife only with the bevel. And the only other feature I add is the drain hole relief. So a little boss at the end for the drain hole. So the aluminum palette just looks like a laser cut in half LT5. And then I mount a scale on each, on the left and the right hand side. And then I just lightly super glue a couple 3D prints on there. And then the reason I'm doing it that way is there's tons of test and tune with Kydex. And if I just machine the whole thing out of aluminum.
Right.
I would have to remachine the whole thing, and that's like a giant, it's like $100 piece of aluminum, and it's like a lot of machine time. So if it doesn't work, the tang isn't going to change because there's no retention on the tang.
It's really smart. Yeah. The blade, the bevel, and everything doesn't change.
Yeah. So what would change is like if I actually had to modify the handle itself or add to the blocking, that's all like interchangeable. So I can test and tune. And so, yeah, it's going to be a bit of tuning, like I said, but that'll be the easy part because 3D
printing. But at that point, you're just modifying the 3D prints.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, to make it a little thicker or a little thinner just to tune the fit.
Yeah.
That's very, very cool.
So the other thought I've considered is like you can get JB Weld putty. So one way you could do it is you could build some of that blocking with like putty and let it harden. And I was close to doing that, but my like CAD designer in me doesn't like it because if I had to redo it, like it, let's say I made like an LT7 that's longer, but it's the same handle. It's like, there's no way I could replicate that like exactly. Whereas if it's a 3D print, I have the file and it's like, that's what I did and it worked and I can measure it and I can redo it and all that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I hate the JB Weld idea. Like good as a method.
Yeah.
If you don't have access to the way that you're doing it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you were trying to accomplish this, it'd be miraculous to not use CAD at all for all of that for vacuum forming. But if you did, that would be one way you could approach it. Be hard to do.
How are you tracking your production? This is going to lead into a lot of, I think, questions in a minute, or tie into some of like what my week has been, but how are you managing like the new projects versus production?
Can I add one more nuts and bolts thing and then I'll answer that question?
Yeah.
I do want to answer that question, but I was just going to say, you're going to cringe. We used the drill press as a grinder stand in the other shop.
Guess what we did?
We turned the drill press into, we turned it into a buffer.
I'm not surprised.
We put an arbor in the chuck and we put a Scotch-Brite flap disc in the drill press. because we can go low RPM, which we really needed. So we're now buffing our Kydex in a drill press and it works perfectly. It works so good.
I am all for using tools for inappropriate tasks, which that's not really an inappropriate task.
Yeah.
But
it's funny though.
It's funny given the length of time you and I have been having conversations around drill presses.
I know. So instead of using it as a buffer stand, we converted it into a buffer.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge technological advance.
But I want to get back to your question, though. I didn't want to miss
all
that.
Right. So No.
You're talking about new projects, laminating on top of production and time management.
Are you actually scheduling it? Or is your brain able to look and be like, oh, okay, you know what? I have this task will take approximately 8 hours and I can fit this in between here. And then you just do that thing.
Yeah. That's exactly what I do. It's been hard because of the move, because the gaps that normally are there are filled with like shop stuff, kind of one and done, like, you know, buy once, cry once, like I got to go hang some more lights or whatever. So it's like, there's been a lot of crap like that that's filled that extra margin time.
Yeah.
But the big thing about this kind of work, the hardest part is I have to manage when it can go on a machine.
Right.
Because I now have two guys working in the shop and it's like they're both running a machine a lot of times. And so they're scheduled on a weekly rotation. And so I have to like this fixture for the form has to be done on Monday. It can't, like, basically the rest of the week is going to be hard. So I basically have it set up to scheduled in to run it on the sile on Monday. So it's my design time is easier to find because I can just sit down and do it, but the machines definitely are a deal. And so that's where that X9 I think is going to help a little bit, just one more spindle.
Yeah.
But that's the trick right there, is getting the machine time.
And right now, I mean, the fact that you have additional bodies is definitely helping, because there are areas where you're freed up, which I don't have at the moment.
Big time.
I can free myself up, but that time comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll tie this into like what I was thinking is, like, basically somebody in my Facebook group posted a rendering of a design I did 9 years ago. And it was called, it was this little, it was like a little Kiridashi. And it was right when I was starting to play with Rhino for 3D modeling. And like I modeled a bevel and like kind of figured some stuff out. And then that project, like I just never did it. At this point, do you have projects that are like old that come back around where you're like, man, I would love to do that, but yes. I legitimately do not know
yes
where to fit that in?
I have like 5 or 7 of those that have been okay. sitting in a freezer for like freezer burn to hell, you know what I mean?
do they fit in your current line?
No.
Like what
there's a couple that do that are like, yes, I'm going to do those in the next 18 months kind of deal, but there's like 4 or 5 that I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a what I think is probably a good idea. No idea. It doesn't fit the model.
Right.
Not sure what to do with it kind of deal.
Doesn't fit in the brand as you have it now.
Yeah.
Man, I have so many where I'm like, this is essentially, and like Burnley brand kind of from the beginning was always meant as like an overarching like design house in my head, in my like ADHD brain. That's how I put it. So like I have multiple lines and like almost businesses inside of that. But like the reality is like, it's just me and Maddie, and to be able to pull certain things in at this point is like, I can't figure out how to do it unless it's just kind of maintains that like one-off, like, oh, random project added in, like thrown out.
I think the only way I can handle that is it's just gonna be a one at a time thing. And the well is deep for those one thing. And then, so when I finish the LT5, I'll just decide on what the next thing is and then start putting that in the margins. Cause I've just found that like I can do production and I can do one thing and squeeze that in. That's
production
it,
plus one.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So, I mean, we had talked, I forget how you framed it the first time, but like kind of like how many balls you could juggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like 2 to 3.
Yeah.
For me, so you're at this point, it's 2 production plus 1. That is a pretty good way. That's a pretty good way of looking at it. So for I would say for like the past week or so, I've been doing a few things. I've been having a design conversation for a collaboration. Okay. I've been doing machining for a batch of Quaken frame locks. And then we've been working through like an apparel drop and also trying to start to plan for Blade Show and Pacific Northwest Custom Invitational. Last night at about, well, yesterday afternoon, like about 3 o'clock, I hit full ADHD, like, paralysis. So if you have ADHD, like you will know what this is, but essentially like the way that I like to think about it is almost like you hit like the loading page and it just sits there. I was at a point in my day where I'm like, kind of choose your own adventure. I'm like, all right, I just finished the last job. And I was like, I can do one of these 5 things. I literally sat in a chair for 90 minutes while my brain was like screaming that I need to like go do this. But then as soon as I would be like, okay, I'm going to go do that, I'd be like, but this is really important.
Yeah.
And then like this. And so, dude, yeah, it's really wild. I was like, all right, I'm going to go. I told Maddie, I was like, I need some time. I went and got a burger and went and saw Dune.
Nice.
I needed full, like just full separation.
It's like that moment. Does it feel like the opposite of hyper-focus? It's like, yes, if hyper focus was on a scale, it'd be that slide the other
it
way.
It is 100% the opposite, but like where hyper focus can be such a positive, this is equally the negative.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stickiness of hyper focus is what this has in inability to actually proceed. And like, this is why, like, kids in school, like, especially like, you know, maybe a little longer ago than our generation, or like maybe more in my generation, like, that's why, like, people, kids with ADHD, like, people thought they were lazy or like, mm-hmm, didn't care. There's all these things, and you're like, no, like, sometimes your executive functioning just stops working.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't take the next step. And it's super easy to be like, well, just do it. Like, you just pick the thing and like, you do it. And that, it's so hard to explain.
Yeah.
I had not hit it for a while. And like, what I realized kind of post action was that I'm doing too much. I know that I'm doing too much,
mm-hmm,
but I also don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I can't like see it.
Yeah.
What's the easy answer? It's like, do less.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, the age old metaphor, too many irons in the fire, is like, if they're all worth a lot of money, it's like, or a lot of enjoyment, not necessarily just money, but like, if they each have an opportunistic value, how do you decide which one to throw out? You know, it's like, there's too many. It's like a conundrum. I know
that
what
is
mean.
Almost like what I feel like that is something we are not really taught. It's like, it's easier when something is not working to be like, this is not valuable, I'm going to eliminate that from my life. But when all the systems are working and there's a level of enjoyment in all systems, that really starts to like muddy the waters.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of ties back, you, when we, before we jumped on, you were like, hey, how's the fixture coming for the key hunt? Have not done it. Right. Got to a point and then kind of got distracted and busy with other things. But I realized that in and of itself is the simplification, which is like, let the efficient jobs be efficient so that I can have some like space to like, which I guess that's what you're essentially saying is like production plus one.
Mm-hmm.
Let that be like, if I'm efficient production for whatever I am stating as like the product, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gives me plus one to maybe be like inefficient or be working on something else.
Yeah. Like same quote my dad says, like, systematize everything you can so that you can humanize everything else.
Dude, that's really good.
Speaking of that,
yeah,
not really a tangent, kind of in track. I need to systematize the cards that go in my boxes because I've been hand filling them all out.
Yeah.
I'm not shipping anymore. Can you guess what the problem with that is?
That you're not signing cards.
Yeah. So I have to pre-sign a bunch of cards.
Yeah.
And it's really awkward because I have to write the right model. And so I have to know how many models they're assembling. Systematize. Got to systematize that because I got to humanize something else. You know what I mean? I got to print those things with models on them, writing them on there.
That's something that like we've struggled with for years and years. Cause I really like, I always did hand signed cards.
Yeah.
And like people like them. Is it valuable enough that it's worth doing all the time? Like, I don't know, but I just saw, is it E-Knives? They just posted something about that. He's like, we sign every order. He's like, I'm not shipping every project or like, you know, product at this point, but I still want all the cards hand signed. This is like a prime example of something that like Joe Wu gives me a hard time about. Cause he's like, dude, you guys spend so much time like signing cards. Just like do this and then be done.
Yeah.
But that's like the fine details that I think like gives a lot to your brand.
Yeah. And that's a valid a valid point that I've been considering on balance. But you've talked before about like starting something in an unscalable way. You've mentioned it with some of your projects. And I look at the situation and I'm like, I think I would get carpal tunnel if we tried to ship all the LT5s that we're going to have built. Like, I don't actually think I could do it without my hand hurting. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's possible at a certain point. You know what I mean? So it's
And this is the issue with scale.
Yeah.
And this is actually, I think this is like a great example of why custom makers or makers of anything that they consider like handmade, why they are fearful of a production mindset or like the idea that something they make is manufactured. I truly think this is like ingrained, like tribal phobia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of things like that. It's like this like slippery slope of, well, like, wait, I can't hand sign it, but like I write everyone a note.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this stop?
Yeah.
Like, it's really minimal unless you're a maker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mean to detract from where you were going. I just,
it doesn't at all. It actually doesn't at all.
As a parallel to what you were saying about like, if you have things like that, it's a little tiny iron in the fire.
Yeah.
But that time could be added to the plus one of I'm building a new fixture or I'm doing a new knife. It's like, so I'm trying to focus heavily on that of like, where are my hands on these things where they shouldn't be? Because I want my hands on the product, but is signing the card where that is most beneficial?
That's a really good question, actually. I think arguably where you are at now, because your process is so refined, you might be like spot on in a certain way where it's almost like, look, the knife that you're producing, by the time it's done, if you didn't touch it, is it the same as one that you sat through every stage of the process? At the point that that is true, that gives you freedom to create value, connection, or interest somewhere else.
And here's an excellent thing. I have a line called Signature Customs.
Yeah.
And my thought is those get signed.
Ooh, totally.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, it gives people the ability, if that's actually what they desire, you know what I mean? Like, it is there.
Yeah.
But,
well, and it ties in, it does, it ties in to the concept of like someone that is caring about you being involved in every step of the process versus someone who is very happy to
wants value,
wants the value and wants your product. And they're two,
Not
that they're always different people, but I think in general, not everyone is going to value a signed, you know, product card the same way.
Right.
That's a pretty good, it's like, and that's a minimum maximum, right? So like, I think we've talked about this like early on. I had kind of had a thing with emails where it was like, I can't answer all the emails that we get, but I can answer the emails that referred me by name.
Mm-hmm.
And because at the point someone is using my name, they're familiar enough with the brand, or they've met me at a show, or they are in Facebook. And it was just one of those things where it's like, it's a minimum maximum. The people that actually care are making it all the way through to me and getting an answer from me. The people that just want a quick answer are getting an answer from Michelle or, you know, Maddie or whatever.
Yeah. They're like getting an FAQ response.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still a human. And I actually think that in some ways, this is like super relevant now as we like move into more like AI, because there's going to be a lot of things that we can have solved by some type of AI assistant. The only people that's going to be a problem for, well, I mean, at a certain scale is like people that know the owner or people that have been in the brand since they remembered talking to a customer sales rep or, you know, it's like, and if you look at a big business, right, like a big knife company, and you're like, okay, well, sales rep goes to these shows, like you're at NRA show or Blade show or whatever, and like you're dealing with some small shop, there's a name and a face and a handshake, and you're submitting an order and they're responding. That's different than submitting an order and having like AI give you like a general response.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be like, but I want to talk to Deborah.
Let me ask you this. You're talking about having too many irons in the fire. Can you think of any little tiny sliver irons like that that you could throw out? Like, what are your hands on, or what is your brain on that you know doesn't have the value? Because we've already discussed if it has a lot of value, that's obviously a hard decision, but there's got to be some things that aren't a hard decision.
Okay, hear me out. Tangent topic starter. Have you watched True Detective?
Mm-mm.
You need to do that.
But, I'm uncultured. I'm,
dude,
I'm revealing
that one. Just binge it with Becca. It's so mm-hmm. good. It's so good. The newest series is so good. Okay. True Detective. There is a quote that pops up a few times, which is like, you're not asking the right question. Or like the question of is the obvious question the one that actually needs asked? Where this ties into what you're asking me is, at this point, I can't figure out if the issue is actually me trying to be more structured and like productive versus the idea of like, what of these other creative pursuits can I stop doing? It's like, is my productivity better used for this like really patchy creative process that like jumps around? I can't answer that yet. To like, it feels like if I was just left to my own devices with enough money in the bank that the day to day wasn't critical, I would probably project hop
mm-hmm.
a lot. And then I would like, and that's the thing, like with, I think the way neurodivergent brains work sometimes is like, okay, you're good at doing things that you're interested in and rubbish at anything else. I have enough things that my brain gets super excited about working on that thing. It's just not always at like the appropriate time.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. Or a practical time. So I don't know, man, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I could get rid of. I don't know. Like, apparel would be a great example. We just did a run. My goal at the outset was to basically do a small collection that actually hit in the season it was intended for. Okay. So we were doing like a crew neck sweater, sweatpants, and a beanie. Making sure that those actually were sold inside of the time when it was cold out.
Mm-hmm.
It was important. But when I look at the time that went into it, versus the amount of revenue that comes out of it, there's no way that it makes sense.
Mm.
Right. But it was still satisfying. I still enjoyed it. And I'm super excited to have an apparel drop done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So should I just not have done that because it ate time? It's like, from a purely financial standpoint, yes. But like overall, I don't know.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing, because I've been wanting to have apparel and haven't done it for the reasons you just said. How possible is it to delegate that stuff?
That's what I'm
asking for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I am learning. One of the things that's difficult, I think, as like a maker or designer, is when you go into a product that's not your product, you still have your same tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
So mine like lean pretty hard into perfectionism. And I don't say that as like a positive. I say that as a hypercritical, aware of every minor detail to the point that no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is really hard when you're dealing with like a graphic designer or somebody else's production.
Yeah.
Because you're basically it's almost like CEO syndrome, right? It's like you can't expect other businesses to do exactly the way that you do, mm-hmm. or to like understand your expectations.
Yeah.
And some of that can be mitigated by like working with the right people and choosing like, you know, products that you can let go of a little mm-hmm. bit. Mm-hmm. So from a delegation standpoint, I think 100%, you just have to be okay with like the outcome. And so, like, ideally it's almost like working with someone who you're like, hey, I need a new shirt. Here's my idea. They come up with a graphic, you approve it, you move on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As soon as you are bogged down in back and forth of like, oh, like, I think I want to change that line a little bit, or like, let's upscale that. It just starts to cut into the profitability.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And just your mental bandwidth, which is the ultimate like finite thing,
right?
Of if you spend, you know, 2 hours contemplating a graphic design decision, that's a lot of time.
Dude. And that is where it stacks. Right.
Yeah.
So basically that's kind of where we ended on this one. It's like a test. And so the first part of this test was to say, okay, I'm going to stop doing like random one-off apparel drops. Like, oh, I want to do this shirt, and just doing a shirt. And then it's like, I want to do apparel 4 times a year, seasonal collection kind of thought. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now the realization is like, okay, yes, that worked, but I can't spend as much time on each individual project inside of that collection.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
I've been trying to go the Chick-fil-A route as opposed to the McDonald's route, where it's like, do you want the spicy one or the not spicy one? You know what I mean? It's like,
dude, this apparel drop, I think we had 16 options.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had, I mean, it really is. It's like we had 3 colors of sweats, right? We had 2 colors of shirts with 2 different logos, and then 2 colors of hats with 1 logo. It's just a lot of data to track.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a pre-order, which at this point, if you're doing anything with sizes, you basically just do a pre-order. And I'm trying to get it to where it's almost not even a pre-order. It's just like print to order.
Mm-hmm.
So on a given date, like, okay, we're coming into the spring, I've got my new long sleeve shop shirts kind of ready to go. At some point, as the weather starts to warm up, I'm going to just push go on shop shirts, and they're going to go to print. You have, you know, whatever it is, any order that comes in within 5 days is going to print. That print will be done in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a pre-order, but it allows us to actually gauge what the response is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And if we had done it on this drop, dude, I would have been completely upside down, because we sold probably 4 times the amount of crew necks that I thought we would. I think we sold like 265 crew neck sweaters.
Wow.
And a quarter of that in sweats, which we've never released before. But I was like, oh, people are going to be stoked to have like a sweat pant, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. This is fun.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this, dude? I'm a knife maker. So it's like,
That's a tough one, man.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
But that's like the brand side. Like, we've talked about like Montana Knife Co. a little bit. Dude, more often than not, I'm seeing apparel. I see ads for apparel. I see a t-shirt. To me, the brands that I like, a lot of times it's like these side products.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you think Josh Smith designs or oversees the hoodie directly?
No. I mean, I don't know Josh, so I can't say that, but I'm guessing. Maybe like an initial, like, oh, I like this artist, have him do some stuff for us. But yeah, at a point it's being delegated. That's like the easiest answer is, well, yeah, I can do anything I want if I have more people to delegate to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bumping up against now is realistic constraints. and not knowing like what to do with that, and instantly railing against it. Because I'm building, like, no.
Building your own cage and then getting mad at it.
Yeah, I'm like, no, reality. You have no, like, don't tell me what I can do or not do. So I keep looking at this, these projects, and being like, okay, ultimately, the things that are running consistently and simply allow me to do, would allow me to do that. Right now, I'm in like this limbo stage where I don't have anything that is like truly efficient or like what I would consider like employee efficient. Like for me to hire someone right now, they would actually have to have a decent amount of shop skill for me to be able to teach them to do the processes that I could delegate. I could hire a machinist, at which point all I'm doing is finishing, because I start getting buried in parts. The way that you're doing it right now is so good, but it also started like very organically, which was you developed a system that worked well for one person. I never developed that system. I just made the things that I want to make.
You know what my gut tells me?
Yeah.
We've talked and circled around you building fixtures and stuff.
I know.
If you're going to hire, I think you're dead right. Hire a machinist. Because for me, it was more natural to be a machinist and hire a finisher, which is exactly what I did.
Yeah.
Whereas for you, it makes more sense to be a finisher and hire a machinist.
Yeah.
For you to be the machinist and the finisher, I think we both know that's not easy.
Yeah.
As we've, well, as we've that, discovered.
That part I can reconcile, because at this point, for me to be the machinist and the finisher, the one expectation is that I can't do that much. Mm-hmm. So like I can't run parts, you know, nonstop and expect to be able to finish those part sets. But I also don't have the need to do that. Right. It's like we've talked about that. Like if I could get to the point where I'm running, you know, 25 fixed blades a month consistently just for the website, that is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. For me to jump that to 50 means that all of a sudden that's my time for the month.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. Yeah. I guess like part of what I'm trying to figure out is like how minimum maximum, right? What is the minimum amount of time I can spend in these different categories that still yield like a real like output, right? Man. And that is why my brain shut down yesterday.
I've been on a trend the last 3 years of that was, I would say what you just described, the like wide, thinner approach to business. Yeah. I've thrown that out and I've gone to narrow and deep.
Yeah.
And I like it a lot better for my like stress level.
Yeah.
Just what worked for me.
I think that there's an element that I can see that will work for me too. And not to say like, I have been in similar before. Like, I mean, we can go back 10 years at the point where like, basically I just started learning CNC and all I was making was Quicken flippers. It wasn't efficient, but it was focused.
Yeah.
That was what my job was. I did those. I did SciPops, made a few fixed blades on the side, but really the only thing at that point that was like running with the efficiency of the CNC in any capacity were SciPops and Quicken flippers. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hate it. I think at this point, like I worry for, it's like some reason, it's like that productive thing or like fear of like constantly feeling like I need something new.
Mm-hmm.
And yet my favorite things are the things that have been like run consistently.
Yeah.
Cue Sabenza.
Yeah.
Like,
no kidding.
You know, CRKT M16. Like, I'm still going to pick those out of lineups as opposed to like whatever is like new and exciting. So it's like, why doesn't my brain let me like do that in my own business?
Yeah. 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 It's tough. I know what you mean. Like, the creative wandering eye, you could call it.
Well, if we, let's look at it in your right now, you have five models.
The LT5 will be the fifth. If you count the scalpel, that would be six, but it's been on ice for so long that I don't count it.
Okay. But. So five, you'd say five regularly occurring models, right?
As of like next month. Yeah, that's what it'll be.
So this will be the same question. Right now you can do five. Can you do seven? At what point does it break down? At what point for you is too many models a reality?
So the thing is, I have two products.
Right. From a process
before the LT5, I had one. So, yes, there is a little, a incremental increase when I add like an Overland Sport to the Overland, but it's if all the fixtures are set up the way we have them.
Yeah.
The only decision I have to make that would be different regarding a different model is what to have a water jet. That's the only aspect of the entire thing that's different. All the tools are the same. All the fixtures are different, but they work the same. All the processes are the same. So it's literally just when I get a sheet of steel or, it lands on my doorstep.
What
like
is that?
Who do I tell? What do I tell the water jetter to cut? That's the only decision change.
Yeah.
Aside from building the fixtures, that's the only, like, I could probably have like two or three times as many models right now and feel pretty okay about that.
Yeah.
But I can't find the time to build that many fixtures. That's the limit.
Right.
It's
and then
the
if you were to add in another process, you're like, oh, I'm going to do a hidden tank and I'm going to do a folder.
And that's exactly.
Right?
And that's where expanding like the process is the product. Sorry.
Yeah.
But the Overland is a umbrella of one. It's one product, but they're all different shapes.
Right.
The LT5 has been dragged out for a long period of time because it's a new umbrella. And so I have two products. And so it's like, I don't look at the LT5 and think that a different version of that would be any different. Like, to me, it doesn't matter.
No, that makes perfect sense because I mean, and like looking back, for me, so knives that are made in a similar way that essentially were designed to be that would be like the Strafe, the Huck, the Bully, where I was like, okay, I get like, I'm going to do Shadowbox scales. I'm going to do removable hardware. I just never made it to a production mentality, but even in hand making those, the process was consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the steps that worked to that end result. And I would have considered it's like a product category.
Yeah. Yeah.
You actually like almost consider it your product. Cause you're like the process, is product like, okay.
Yeah,
no, I'm in the messy middle right now, which is I've never really had stuff water jet cut. I haven't built this type of fixture. And I think what's happening a little bit is just like some general, like, overwhelm because there's enough unknowns for me that I can't just go and do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Came into the shop this morning and I was like, I need to warm up the engines. Right. Mm-hmm. I felt exactly like I did last night, which was like completely like drained. I have a list of 100 things that I know that I should be working on or at least trying to schedule. And I couldn't really do it. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to start making cord wrap knives.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a regulation project for my brain, but it's that I know the process so well.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to pick something and go.
So I just picked something and I'm like, this isn't anything that I need to be working on, but it's something that will let my brain get back in. My goal is to have the new fixed blade in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
That means that I have to figure out all of the steps, fixturing all the way through. And it feels like daunting.
It is.
You know?
It is. Yeah. Doing it the first time is daunting.
But it's the first
time. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to, it's like where my brain is stuck right now. Where do I make that time? How do I structure that time? Is it, because I have to make money too, right? So do I work 3 days out of the week on making money and 2 days out of the week on the fixture until it's done? Do I split days? Like, what would work for you?
For me, it's more like the split day route, I would say. So like,
would you start on the fixture or on product?
So on product, there's only one day of the week that I really have to be directly on the product, and that's sharpening.
Yeah.
Because
take yourself back a year.
So
pre-Dalton.
Pre-Dalton.
Yeah.
I got one knife. It's the Overland. It's all I'm going to get.
Yep.
Nothing else is happening. I'm serious. That's where I was. After he came in, all of those models came out, except for the Confidant. But the Confidant launched right around the time he came in. So I did do the engineering, but it was the Confidant that forced me to change my direction, because it wasn't, I realized that expanding this product to be more than one knife is not possible, is where I was.
That actually makes me feel way less bad, because like I've got a lot of products.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you knowing me well, what do you think? Like, do you think I should start? So if I say split days, so first half of the day is one thing, second half of the day is another thing.
Yeah.
Start on product or design?
Knowing you, don't split the days.
Do full days.
Yeah.
Because of hyper focus.
Yeah. Do full days, schedule those days, 1 or 2 days a week, whatever you can make work. Because I do split days now, but I've gotten like Trello set up to the point where I have a checklist. So like Monday, I know I need to build that fixture that I mentioned. I have the same checklist every Monday that I do. It's like eight things.
Yeah.
And then sometimes there's an extra one that I add if there's some weird thing going on. But I'll do those eight things real fast, and I'll do them as fast as I can. And then I know as soon as I check the eighth box, boom, instantly I'm making a fixture. And so I have the eight checks, check the eight things, go. And so without that, the split day didn't work for me, because it's like I would do like three of the things.
Yeah.
And then I'd be over there working on a fixture. I'm like, oh, I forgot. Dang, I didn't post the podcast. Sorry, everybody. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and so those check boxes are what do it for me, is like, I have the freedom to walk away as soon as they're all checked, and then I pivot.
That's pretty amazing.
And then I have one for Monday, and I have one for the first of the month, because there's a lot of there's a cluster of to-do list on the first of the month, and there's a cluster on Monday for me.
Yeah.
And so I take care of that cluster using a checklist, so that first Monday of every month, I have the Monday checklist and the first of the month checklist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then once they're green, like check it, turns green, boom, walk away, done. And one of those is like I can look at it real quick, just for clarity, I guess I can read what it is. So on my Monday checklist, there's eight things. Post the podcast, first thing I do every Monday. Don't call me a liar. I know I am, because I don't post it every Monday. I don't always have one to post every Monday.
Sometimes we don't record it.
Yeah. So post podcast, first thing. The spreadsheets that we use that are our mainframe for our whole shop, I have to generate that for the previous week's sales. So the midnight before that is when that week terminated from the sales. Okay. So I create that spreadsheet. It's just quick copy, drag, format a couple things. Then I set up the three weekly blue bins with those labels on them for that week, so that immediately the guys can start filling them. I answer all the emails that are there. I order every Kanban that's in my Kanban order bin. And then I have a shelf in the shop where everything that's been delivered that is a Kanban, I don't put it away when it arrives. I put it on the shelf, so that every Monday I order the Kanban stuff, and then the stuff that came from last Monday is probably there. I store that and put the Kanbans back. Then I do my QuickBooks. Then I order tools, carbide tools, because I don't have those Kanban. So I take a sheet and I go count them on a sheet. And then I have a spreadsheet with the links to every tool with a number. So I go and I have a number of how many I should have in there as a max and how many I do have. And then I just go through the sheet, add to cart, all the things to make those tool numbers full. Because it just, to me with those tools, it's hard to Kanban like 32 things. It's too many Kanbans. So that's my Monday.
That is insane, dude.
In what way?
In how structured and organized and how much sense it makes.
It does work.
Like, I'm using Trello too. I have tried a lot of different techniques as far as like schedule. Like, I used to do Fridays as like material orders days. That is a huge amount to get done in a single day, and that sets you up for an entire
week. And I can tell you, if I had to do all that stuff without the list, I would be trying to go build a fixture, and I'd find myself in Fusion for like an hour and a half, and then I'd remember, I'd go to my email real quick and be like, oh, I got like 20 emails, gosh dang it, and I would do that.
Okay.
Then I would go back to the fixture, then I would see my Kanban thing, or I'd be like, crap, I forgot.
That's where I'm at right now, basically.
Give yourself lists for the first of the month. If there's any like important day, like first of the month and Monday for me, and then throw the chores that you know need done. And then if you ever forget something, like you're like, holy crap, I can't believe I forgot to pay my mortgage. Add that to that list, and you'll find that those lists will start to grow, because you'll find that there's a chore that you didn't think about that once you've forgotten it once, you know to put it on which list. Is it monthly or is it weekly?
Yeah.
And I've found that almost every chore that I have fits in one of those two categories of either doing it on Monday or doing
and you're
it
just
on the
like
first.
Linking them too, which is, it doesn't matter that it's something personal necessarily,
and then,
because you start to get the same value.
And then here's the dopamine thing is, I know as soon as I check that eighth box, I get to walk away with no guilt, and I get to design or build a fixture or whatever. Right.
But that means you get to walk away, and then for how long?
So I don't look at that list again until next Monday.
So if you're saying, so that list takes you all of Monday to get done?
No. I mean, like, because it's so ordered and I've done all those and I have them all like in spreadsheets, it's like maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay. So that would list would take me 2 days.
But here's the thing. I'm the same way. But if you have the list and you have that dopamine management system of like,
reward.
check the eight boxes, and then you get to design. And it's like, boom, boom, boom. And then I do it. I'm in some way like a lot like you in that it's like, if I can see eight check boxes, I want to check them. If I can't see them, they're all over the place. It's a rat's nest. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If it's not on a list, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. So that is how I've managed the chore side.
That's pretty good. So that right there, that ties into your question to me earlier of like, what can I eliminate? It's not eliminating, but it is simplifying. Mm-hmm. So I've done a little bit of this. So like I have in Trello, I have a monthly output list that starts at the beginning of every month. And it's got the products that I know that I'm considering like are bread and butter, non-negotiable products. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it incredibly structured as how I do those, when maybe that is something that I could like tighten up, but it has worked because it's like every month I know I'm doing X amount of SciPops, X amount of polys, you know, and then I've got, you know, some stuff that maybe is still moving and I'm trying to figure that out. Like how many, mm-hmm. can I do some customs in there every month? Like, but I can probably simplify my task list overall by just making like, by saying like, okay, Mondays, I'm going to order materials, supplies, anything that we're running
and
low on.
Can I say one more critical thing as to why that only takes me like an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Is if those things don't require decision-making.
Yeah. That's the key.
But if you have to set it up in a way that they don't require decision, they don't naturally not require decision-making.
Right.
So like I said, with the tools, I have 32 tools that are in my overall library.
Yeah.
I sat down because I was tired of every time trying to decide, like, is eight of those too many? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, you just make a baseline.
So I made the baseline list because I'm like, those eight things, zero decisions. I just do exactly, it's just, like I said, systematize that so that the rest of the day is human. You know what I mean? Because making that spreadsheet is something AI could do. I don't know how to program it, but I would love to have that. But I can do it in 5 minutes if I just copy paste format A, B, C, D, go. You know what I mean? Whereas if I'm sitting there thinking like, I don't know if we should put our scales on there or should they just be the knives? You know, it's like decision made previously.
Yeah.
So I try to like everything on that list, have a worksheet, have a printout, have a spreadsheet so that you're just clicking essentially.
Right. Same for shipping supplies, everything.
Yeah. And that's all Kanban. All the supplies.
I need to pick your brain a little bit on Kanban, or just have you send me links where you learned.
Kanban has saved us so much struggle. Like immeasurable struggle. There's zero chance I would ever go away from it. Like it's cornerstone, pillar.
Okay.
Could not.
And that's one I think right now, I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to take your, like, take the feedback on doing full days, and I'm going to try to make sure I get at least one full day on fixture this like coming week. Okay. And then I'm going to try to ramp that up because that's what I realized. It's like, I have a few months till blade, but I'm going to run into problems. I'm going to mess something up. And ideally, I can make it through, like, you know, we were talking when I first started even just getting water jet done. It's like, do I do it local? Do I like outsource it? Like, there's all these steps that are involved that like, they're so far outside of like what my normal workflow is that it's like just a big stop sign or like red light. And you don't know when it's going to turn green, you know? So I think eliminating as many variables as possible and just like, same with Kanban, where it's like, if I look at my entire shop, it's super overwhelming. But if I say like, okay, I'm just going to make sure that for the Kihon, whatever hardware I have for that and whatever tools I have for that is Kanban, then it can like ripple out
then
from
it grows.
That product.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are going to be like my accountability tasks for next
and
podcast.
When you have an employee, it's absolutely way like the Kanban thing, it's like when there's only one person, it's like for me it definitely helped a lot, but like you could see where it'd be like, well, is that like redundant in a way? But as soon as I had an employee, it's like he hits the bottom of the eyelet drawer, black oxide eyelets, puts the card in a little bin, I don't even have to know about it.
He knows
on Monday morning I'm going to order everything that's in that bin, and he knows that there's that much more. A replenishment is already sitting on the shelf. He already knows where it is. So it's like, he doesn't have to tell me to order stuff, which if you don't have Kanbans, like you'll just get every 15 minutes, like, oh, we're almost out of this. Oh, we're almost out of this. Oh, we're almost out of
there.
This.
I mean, me and Maddie still do it. And I do it to myself constantly where I'm like, oh man, I know I need this. And then I forget.
Yeah.
So, and it is right now, I think the other big takeaway for me right now is to remember to think about the way that I'm making something as a product in and of itself. And then I can think of what else I can group in there.
Yeah.
Exactly. So like right now, I know like I've got like four or five knives that fit really well into like the Kihon kind of like size envelope, materials, everything. That is a logical starting point to like get one running. And then if I want something else to just add it to that system. Jens listens. So Jens, I'm going to call you, but I got to call Jens because I want to pick his brain around this too, because he came at what he's doing in his shop now, multiple employees, like more manufacturing from what I'm doing now. Right. Which was making weird one-off stuff and like making custom and like kind of maybe outsourcing occasionally. But like, I think that his path to where he's at now probably dealt with a lot of the issues that I'm kind of running into, like multiple product lines, multiple categories, materials, all this stuff. And I'm curious to hear like maybe how he did that.
He is the one that told me about Trello. So
I know, and me too.
Yeah.
And I'm finally listening to both of you guys. Or we could just have Jens on the pod.
Let's do it.
Let's do that. You want to do that?
Yeah, I do.
Hey, Jens, you want to be on the pod? Okay.
Yeah, we'll wait for a response.
Yeah.
And you know he heard us.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely heard us.
His senses tingling.
Okay. That was kind of a deep dive on some of the issues that I'm having right now. So thanks for the shop therapy session.
It's been fun. It's a good one.
Yeah. That's super helpful. You want to wrap it?
Well, let's wrap it. That sounds okay. Great. I appreciate all you guys though.
Yep.
And that was fun. And thank you for the Patreon support.
Yep. Saw a few new supporters roll through. We appreciate you guys.
Yeah.
We're like always talking about kind of next steps for the pod. We got a meeting next week.
Yeah.
So we're working on stuff. Appreciate you guys.
The pod is one of those irons in the fire that's just decarburizing into.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. We're just trying to figure out next steps.
Yep. Yep. It's
all right.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys.
Take it easy.